Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tamara Lee's Trend On, engaging your audience to trend on you, live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central Time. Trend On, featuring guest interviews and current trends from businesses to entertainment to lifestyle topics. And here's your host, the engaging Tamara Lee.
Good morning. Welcome to Tamara Lee's Trend On, engaging your audience to trend on you. I am your host, Tamara Lee, founder of Tamara Lee LLC, a communications expertise company meeting the needs of clients on multiple communications platforms from mobile social and content to image and style consulting. And you can find me at TamaraLeeLLC.com. I want to thank you for joining us along with my co-host, Heidi Teamster, here on the Link Local Network. Heidi is my producer and co-host, and you can connect with both of us on LinkedIn, Google+, Facebook, and on the LinkLocalNetwork.com. So for today's show, we have an exciting one coming up. We have PicNIC 2014 congressional candidate Nick Wilkoson on Tamara Lee's Trend On as we look to what are the top issues for voters to consider in the upcoming 2014 midterm elections. Across America, the stakes are higher and the issues tougher heading into the 2014 elections. Our guest, Nick Wilkoson, congressional candidate, tackles the key themes for voters from accountability in Washington, big government, immigration, and Common Core to the Affordable Health Care Act. And all of these themes, whether you're voting in Florida's District 18, where Nick is the congressional candidate and his campaign is running on a common sense solution, to the issues that impact every American's life, liberties, and pursuits of financial and physical health and happiness. So these are themes that resonate as Americans across this. We all look towards fall, although we want to enjoy, at least here in the Midwest, what summer we're trying to have. So it may seem a far way away for next November 2014, but as it happens, the campaigns kind of ratchet up at the end of summer and kick into high gear. And, you know, it's not too soon to be thinking ahead of finding out information and be an informed voter. And that's what today's show is really about, is to bring some valuable information and focus on the issues that affect us no matter which congressional district we're voting in, whether it's securing our borders or the privacy of our personal data, whether you're right or left or stuck in the middle. Nick, as well as I, would invite all voters to discuss information and ideas, not just political jargon, and think before you vote on a platform true to the Constitution. Nick, our guest, however, has been endorsed by the National Tea Party and the Conservative Party of Florida. And they will have more information at the end of the show on how to contact Nick and get more information on that. After we talk, we'll be covering things like the accountability plan, Common Core. He's got a campaign component of All Aboard Florida, and then why he is running and the importance of winning Florida 18. And we will perhaps touch on immigration and the Affordable Care Act. So before we get into our show, though, as always, we have our shout-out to our sponsors from my co-host, Heidi Teamster.
Good morning. We'd like to thank Mediavine Marketing, simplifying social media for successful businesses and professionals through training, consulting, and management. Mediavine Marketing, minimizing your efforts and maximizing your results. We'd also like to thank ZipBoss.com, a professional business cloud built and maintained by Metasoft, Inc. ZipBoss, create, market, succeed, where powerful websites are born. Thank you, Tamara.
Thank you, Heidi. And as we talk about the elections, I also wanted to say that next week our guest on Trend On will be Willie Spears, also from Florida, so you can join us again next week at live every Wednesday at 10 a.m., where we will be trending on Willie Spears, our motivational teacher and author and speaker. So somehow we're channeling, must be my desire for all that summary, we're channeling a little Florida. Do we have Nick on the line?
Good morning. This is Nick Wilkoson. How are you?
We're relieved now that you're on the line.
My deepest apologies. I don't know what's going on. I actually grabbed an age stone to call you this time, so wanted to get through. How are you guys doing this morning?
Oh, well, good. Now that my heart palpitations are settling down a little bit, I'm like, okay. I'll just talk all half hour. And thank you for your being tenacious there and trying to get through. Hopefully this is the worst of the problems here.
Absolutely.
So welcome, and thank you for joining us today on our show, and hopefully we can quickly get to the important issues that you have to cover. So I was giving, before we got you on air, a little bit of your background in your Tea Party endorsement and your congressional district and some of that information. But why don't we start off by you giving us an introduction of you and why you decided to run, because a political campaign and race is not for the weak of heart.
Not for the weak of heart, and a lot of people think I'm absolutely crazy, and I can understand that view. Well, first of all, who I am, again, thank you for having me this morning. My name is Nick Wilkerson. Live in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, South Florida. I'm a resident of Florida, born and raised actually on the other side of the coast in St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay area. I am a Christian first and foremost. I'm a family man. I have a great and amazing wife and two amazing young children. I'm currently a small business owner, definitely not an attorney. I'm not a career politician either, but in my business, we help other small companies basically do more with less, how to be more efficient and productive and compliant with government compliances and tax compliances and HR-related compliances. So there's a lot of that value that I bring definitely to Congress. I'm also a former police officer, and I work for the city of Cape Coral, Florida. And there's definitely a lot of value from that career that I bring to the office when it comes to holding everybody accountable. Why I'm doing this? Well, it's a good question. It's a good question because it's a loaded answer, but it's really because I know I can achieve something. I know by stepping up and stepping forward with a real plan that I've put together over the years, that I can actually bring real accountability and responsibility on both sides of the aisle in Washington. It's real important to me. You know, I'm a dad. I'm an American, definitely an American former party member. And it's really important to me to kind of bring this runaway train around and turn it around in Washington when it comes to the fiscal abuse and the waste that we see on both sides of the aisle. It's out of control. And my plan, actually, it holds everybody accountable to every dollar that we give them. It follows the dollar. It tells us who touches the dollars, how they touch it, how do they spend it, what program receives it, how efficient, how effective is that program with our tax dollars. It also ties in any and all special interests to that spending behind that program and that member of Congress. So what my plan does, it's called the Accountability 101 Plan. It simply gives we the people the very tool needed to hold government accountable to us. You know, and that's how they're designed to be, is accountable to us. And the last time I checked, right now, our government's the polar opposite. They're not accountable. They're not transparent. They're overstepping their bounds in pretty much every corner of their job duties. And they're completely out of control and disconnected from the people. So I think we need to stop. We need to take off our party blinders. We need to stop fighting over the family dinner tables and the water coolers at work and stop trying to fight over whose party is better and, you know, who's doing the right thing and wrong thing. It's almost like a college rivalry, like a football rivalry or a big international soccer rivalry. I mean, people get so ugly and so frustrated, and next thing you know, there's a big argument over the family table, and Uncle Bob storms off, and no one gets the dessert. So it's right. One of those things that, you know, we're all just tired of. And we, you know, my voice is very loud and my position is very loud on, you know, bringing folks together on common ground and remembering that the majority of us, not all, want the same things out of our country. We all want a strong, healthy, productive country filled with jobs and opportunities and so forth, safe and secure as well. It's just we all might see different roads to get there. So if we can
do
find
you think
that
we're going
ground,
to see that? I was going to say, do you think we're going
overnight
to see that more in this election of people less polarized to team left or team right and more like let's all unite on government accountability and responsibility and getting back to our constitutional core?
Well, you know what I'm seeing right now, especially on the campaign trail, it's on all these fairs and forums, but really I say fairs first because, like, when you're out in the actual general public and not around the, you know, the party group people, the common opinion is they're all set up. You know, they're all frustrated. And they all might be registered Republicans, Independents, Democrats. I've heard it from them all. We're in a phase right now where the country is absolutely frustrated, and they're rightfully so. I think we're all pretty much frustrated with what's going on. But what's scary is that while someone like myself is definitely stepping up to do the right thing with the right plan and so forth, that from myself to even the career politicians in my race and other races who are running, they're not really raising any money because folks aren't donating. They're not getting involved, again, because they're frustrated. But it's really backfiring because it really could backfire because if folks don't get involved, especially right now, it's just making it easier for the wealthy to get to, you know, to buy their way into Washington, and that's exactly what's wrong with Washington, at least one of the biggest problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the wrong people are up there for the wrong reason. So if we the people don't actually get more involved right now and get you to stand with someone that you believe in that's really fighting for liberty and defending the Constitution and our rights and so forth, and doing it for all the right reasons, we're actually really trying to look ourselves in the mirror after election day and kind of blame ourselves for not trying to get involved. And I hate to say it like that, but it's really true because we're seeing it in such a massive wave right now that it's, like, it's scary. It's absolutely scary.
Yeah, no, and that was why I was, you know, looking forward to having you on because I believe that, I mean, we have a privilege in this country to have political conversation before an election, and it behooves us all as voters to think about the issues and think about the people we're electing and will they be good stewards of what we're sending them to Washington to do.
And you know what I've learned as well, too, along the way is that if, side note, is when I look at, you know, my opponents, and I'm somebody, even in these forums, I turn and I look at them because I'm just as interested in hearing what they have to say as a voter. And that's where a lot of my passion originated from. So to this day, that continues. I definitely haven't fallen into that, you know, just thinking about what I'm going to say and look at my notes type of guy. That's not who I am. But what's disheartening as well is you look at my opponents, you look at a lot of these other folks, and you look at even members on the other side of the aisle who are running for office, and you look backwards in time. You look at the prior elections that we've all voted for from presidents on down, and we've all kind of fallen for these type of candidates that sit there and tell you, they share with you their principles, they share with you passion, they share with you great big promises, but they never tell us how they're going to do it. They never follow through on how. And it's really important that if we are to stand behind the right people, it can't be just somebody that says, well, I believe in repealing Obamacare, and I believe in spending, and I believe in, you know, that's great. I mean, most people in the room you're probably talking to probably agree with you. The question is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it when you go to Washington? You can give us specifics. Don't just say, I'm going to be a fiscal conservative and I'm going to stand up to the abuse. Well, that sounds great, too, but it's like, again, maybe the businessman in me tells me this. You know, if you're starting a business and you want to make $1 million your first year, God bless you. But, and you might have all the great principles, the best principles in the world. You might believe in a hard work ethic. You might believe, you know, in all these great principles and values. But if you don't have a strong business plan to apply those principles to, your principles mean nothing in that respect. They really don't, because you're not going to be successful in your goal. When it comes to government, when it comes to running for Congress or any other office for that matter, and on the side of the aisle, if you don't have a plan, a specific plan that tells we the people how Nick Wilkerson is going to go to Washington and swim against the current of the establishment, and actually go up there and stand for the people and actually bring real representation and give the people specifics and how I'm going to hold them accountable to every dollar, how I'm going to hold them accountable to the Constitution, et cetera, then I don't have anything. But in my case, I do. I have those plans, and that's what I'm excited about because I know I bring it, and it's also scary at the same time because this is a United States congressional race. This is extremely, extremely important, and it scares me because I thought I'd be up against other plans. I thought I'd be up against a more professional strategy in this race, and I'm not. And I wonder, are other races like this, too? Are they packed with folks who are just standing there spitting out rhetoric and empty promises? Probably.
Right.
And I'm seeing firsthand how and who even are the wrong people that we're sending to Washington. You know, we're sending the wrong people. We need to reevaluate how we stand behind candidates and why we stand behind candidates and stop falling for the rhetoric and emptiness.
I would agree with that, and that's, again, why I'm thankful to have you on and have conversation and dialogue about the issues and a plan other than, well, we'll just tax more money or spend recklessly and figure it all out on someone else's dime. So the accountability plan sounds exciting in terms of, and I also believe it seems like you're resonating with your campaign, is that we really need to fundamentally, philosophically look at what's the purpose of sending people to Washington and really inverting the triangle of local to a too big of government.
Mm-hmm.
So
I want
to quickly get on to a couple of the other issues because I want to, you know, all the talking points I want to touch on. So I know you had All Aboard Florida, and do you want to explain what that is a little bit more?
Sure. Well, All Aboard Florida is a private venture that's been proposed now for a while, and it goes, it's a high-speed rail. And to be real short and sweet about the story, is it's a high-speed rail that goes up and down the eastern coast of Florida. It even has plans to go across the middle of Florida, obviously, with Orlando being the center hub. So one route going over towards Tampa, which is really down the I-4 corridor from Orlando to Tampa. And it really is the destination points on each end of the runs is really the port of Florida. It's a venture that's being marketed and advertised as a rail for passengers. And it's been heavily so. They really kind of stayed away from the true intentions of it, which is really about freight. Now, that's fine. I support free market. I support great ideas and businesses and so forth to prosper and be successful. But like I look at pretty much every issue out there, you have to look at from cover to cover all the consequences, all the pros and cons. And the problem with All Aboard Florida is it's going right through the middle of our cities and towns. A, there are no stations between West Palm Beach and Orlando anyways to board anybody, which also tells you something else. It's really not about the people. But it goes right through our towns, right through our cities. There's 352 crossings alone just in the Treasure Coast area, the district that I'm running for. A lot of the cost and repairs and emergency repairs and so forth on these crossings are going to be at the expense of the taxpayer. The trains are estimated to average between 95 and 105 miles per hour. It's not, again, about the cost of the ticket for a passenger because at the end of the day, it's about freight. They're estimating 32 trains a day right now, but it'll probably be closer to 64 when you actually add in the freight, which is going to cause a lot of downtime, traffic delays. There's water bridges are going to be up that take 16 minutes to go up and down each. When you start adding up all the times and look at the delays and the consequences to the community, it's not the right thing to do. Plus, the All Aboard Florida has applied for well over $1 billion worth of federal grant money, which impacts all of us coast to coast, as all of our federal tax dollars go to such loans. So it's not necessarily the what, it's the how. And that's a general principle that I carry with me in business and in personal life and so forth, and I'll bring to Washington. It's never the what, and not to jump topics, but from healthcare issues like Obamacare to if you're any other issue, to the whole Common Core thing going on right now, it's not the what. Of course I'd love to have a better education system for our kids. I have a 9-year-old in the process system right now. Of course I want more affordable and accessible health care. Absolutely. But it's the how. And mm-hmm. when you actually start looking at how they're approaching this and how it's being implemented and so forth, you start seeing all the cracks in it. You start seeing all the unconstitutional angles to it. You start seeing so many problems with it that it's just not the right how. So back to All Aboard Florida, it's a nightmare for our state, it's a nightmare for our district, and even if it just stays at a state level at some point, I'll be that federal congressman that even if I don't have direct voting opportunities, if I don't have an opportunity to sit on a committee to affect it, I'll be that congressman that's standing there next to all of my fellow district, you know, constituents holding the sign. That's what I believe that this position is all about, is doing everything you can in your power, even as a citizen, to stand there with a sign to help your community.
And I, you know, that all resonates back to as we look around at some of the current fiascos going on with the areas of big government and the federal government, of why would we be inclined as voters to think that our government is better capable of handling things when clearly they've demonstrated otherwise. And that gets into, I like what you said about the how and the what. It's not that issues don't need to be addressed, but it's how we go about that process. So how would you apply that to the Common Core issues then? Because I know that's a hot button, and you have to be careful of, you know, I had 10 years in education, and in ELL education, which then overlaps with immigration issues, so I feel very strongly about legal immigration because I worked with families and students who went through that process legally, and then that impact on the education. So the two are very closely connected.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, Common Core, again, the what, how factor definitely applies to this. This is a prime example of big government and big business kind of joining forces. This is not a partisan issue. This is a bipartisan issue. There's Democrats and Republicans supporting it. There's Democrats and Republicans against this. It's you know, the Gates Foundation putting well over $160 million into it, and that number is climbing now as they're putting together more and more curriculums. It's, you know, big government trying to standardize you know, one form and one, again, standard of testing and curriculum, you know, from coast to coast, from top to bottom. You know, kids in South Miami are going to be studying the same curriculum, even though it's a completely different culture, as those in North Dakota, and so forth. So there are variances in, you know, geography in our country when it comes to the cultures and so forth that aren't being considered. And on the other side, you have, you know, with the Gates Foundation and all these other companies that are donating $1 million here and $1 million there, you start looking at the actual tests themselves. You start looking at the problems. You start reading that all these companies that are donating money, it's really a marketing platform. They're using these companies in a very, very great light for all these kids to then value their products in these companies. They're truly selling our kids through this process. It's simple marketing 101 being applied at the school level. But then you really look at the overall test. You look at the complexity of these tests and how they're trying to change things up and recreate the wheel, per se, when it comes to, we've all seen a million of these math examples, for example, and it's just, you need, I mean, I know people who have master's degrees in math and they can't figure some of these problems out. Though I've never been a teacher or directly involved in a school board down here, I've sit on the SAC committees in Palm Beach County for many years. I'm that dad who's extremely involved in his son's life. My daughter's only one, so when she gets up there, I'll be doing the same thing. But I have to be involved. And I've done all these board meetings and school meetings and so forth. And I remember when this first started coming around a few years ago, they started putting these questions up on the projector. And they put one question up there, and there's of course, a big, long paragraph. And there's probably about 7 or 8 or 9 school board-related people, about 7 principals, and probably about the same amount of parents and so forth in there in this room. And they all put it up there. Not one person in the room could solve this problem. Not one. And it was a third grade question. Not one person in that entire room can solve it. And that tells you something. This is what we're putting in front of our third graders. You start looking at the test results out of the state of New York when they first started testing this thing. Only 30% of the kids were being graded as proficient. Only 30%. Now, if you're the Common Core people and you're testing this thing, I doubt you're going to the school that you know is going to give you a lower grade. You're going to try to find some of these schools that are probably going to give you a better score because you're trying to prove yourself too. Now, they're getting only 30%, right? And all these teachers are multiple teachers in multiple schools, especially in New York when they're testing this thing, we're actually submitting the same questions. They're asking how do you handle and how do you submit these tests that are covered in vomit? And that's a little descriptive, but these kids, that's how severe and how heavy these tests are. So the how factor when it comes to Common Core is a total tragedy. It's a nightmare. It's truly to kind of push kids to one extreme or the other, from proficient to failing. There's really no middle class, even in the schools, when it comes to how this test is separating out our kids. It's the same theory or same approach that's being taken in our society and our economy and so forth. It's really thinning out the middle class. And that's just, I mean, a lot of thoughts out there and views on why that might be happening, but at the end of the day, I know it's happening to my son in the schools, but I'm going to stand up against it because we need to also bring education back to the state level. LBJ was the first to put out there, you know, all this federal control and grant money and so forth. Jimmy Carter jumped into the mix and really amped it up. Ever since, every president's put their finger or hand into the education game and either kept it alive or added to it. I'm passionate about bringing education back to the state level where it's constitutionally approved and where it's supposed to be. I believe the state and the communities can do a much better job for our kids and our school system and our education process than the federal government can, because the first part of your question was really about what can the federal government really accomplish and what can they really be successful at. And my answer is nothing. Unless you count into it catering to special interest groups and the fact that got them elected, they're very successful at that. That's what they're really good at.
Excellent points about the education of, you know, it raises the issues of teaching to the test, the big interest by the companies that have financial vested interest in the testing of the curriculum, and the dollars tied to that, the perpetuation of the bureaucracy of the financial dollars in the education system. And, you know, I can say that from a local and state level, that there is a lot of money that just is flowing away from direct student-teacher instruction. And that does need to be looked at. So, you know, your passion there, I think, is well placed. Not that what I think matters, but I think that
as parents,
and I have five kids, raised them, you know, through the school system. I have a couple of family members who are educators down in Florida, and we were just at a family reunion and talked about education and what it looks like because of all of those issues that you've talked to. The other one that I want to get to, Florida is an immigration state in terms of it influencing you probably greater than some of us, you know, like a North Dakota.
sure.
So if you want to touch on that quickly, and then, we'll wrap it up here.
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I kind of started by this. You know, as a former police officer, whenever I approach a mob scene, for example, imagine, you know, myself pulling up in a squad car to a parking lot full of people fighting and just, you know, mobs of people out there. You have to secure the scene down. You have to get everybody under control. You have to manage and control the numbers, in this case, the amount of people out in that scene, before you can effectively, you know, manage it and weed through it and make sure the right people go there and the right people go there. There's a process, this common sense approach to handling an out of control number that applies to our immigration issue. We must secure the borders first. Because if you don't establish some type of lower level of control, you know, when it comes to the numbers, of course, you're never going to be 100%, you know, perfect on it. But if you can't find some level of control of the numbers, you can't then manage the current populations in place. So I think common sense tells us that we got to secure the borders first. Otherwise, we're dangling a big fat carrot of incentive for everybody else to just come over and wave while we're going, you know, house to house, undocumented immigrant, trying to figure out, you know, what we should do with them. It's like putting the cart before the horse. I know, you know, related to schools, there's a lot of the in-state tuition versus out-of-state tuitions and so forth. Well, if they're not a resident of the United States, they're definitely not a resident of the state. I don't see how that constitutes a in-state tuition for a resident of that state when they're not even a resident of the country. Plus, I have a heart. I'm not just only think with my brain type of guy. I mean, I have compassion and I have feelings towards a lot of folks who do want to come here legally or want to come. Well, they might want to come here legally, but the line's so long and expensive to come here. So I understand sometimes some of the incentives, but there's national security issues here involved. There's obviously a lot of drug trafficking involved. There's all types of horror stories that we hear all the time that the news is even starting to pick up more and more on now. It's been happening for a while. They haven't been covering it. There's a lot of different issues here by having this this border that, you know, half open, half closed, type of border that we have. So we have to secure the border, and we have to start enforcing the laws that we have on the books. You know, the president has all types of exceptions and executive policies out there right now that's basically, not to enforce the law. We need to reverse those. We need to stick to what the laws are on the books. We need to secure the borders. And sure, We can better the legal process. You know, everything in life is about incentive, from immigration to my son making his bed every morning, right? Everything's about incentive. So we need to make sure the right incentives are in place for people to get in line to do the legal thing. and not do the unlawful or illegal thing. So secure the borders, better the process, and then, and only then, can we then sit down and say, okay, what can we really do about the 11, 12, 13, 14, whatever, how many of undocumented workers are here, how can we effectively manage them? Because it's not realistic that we're going to drive around in some bus and pick everybody up, kind of like what buses do at the end of those marathons, to pick up the slow runners. It's not going to happen in this case. It's not realistic. But I'm not saying we should have amnesty either, but we should come to the table then and figure out what can we do to put them in the back of the line, figuratively speaking, make sure they pay their dues, and make sure everyone's held accountable, from them to even the employers and then the domestic employers that are paying them under the table. Everyone and anyone who should be held accountable will be held accountable, and I'll definitely be that loud voice in Washington making sure that they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like there's an uncanny ability of Washington to dispel common sense when you look at some of these issues that overlap in terms of the bigger picture. And as you mentioned, it's national security, it's our education, it's our immigration policy, and they all are interconnected, but yet it's like there's this disconnect when you polarize all of these issues. So in closing, maybe you can touch on that common sense of what you hope to bring to Washington and as part of your campaign. So we'll give you the last minute soapbox.
Well, there's definitely no common sense in Washington right now, so any is definitely going to shine, any amount that is. Well, you know, we as citizens need to stop thinking that those we elect are going to hold themselves accountable. We have to put plans and policies and tools in place that force their hands, that forces government to be accountable. They're like kids out of control. Then they can't control themselves. They can't stick to what they promised. They can't, again, hold themselves accountable. We have to force their hand. So in doing so, that's what my plan does. And it's not recreating the wheel. I know I used that expression earlier, but under the Bush administration was something called the Program Assessment Rating Tool, PARC, the PART program. And the PART program was a piece of what I bring, but it was a very important piece in the sense that it was transparency that we, the people, could see every year of how every program, how efficient they were or how inefficient they were. They were program assessments. And it was a little bit of a complicated read, and it was an Excel sheet that stretched from West Palm Beach to Tampa. So it was definitely something that took a long time to weed through, but I'm that crazy guy that sits at the screen in the morning every year for probably a month straight reading this thing and trying to understand it and what does it mean. And, and then I would take that program and I would look backwards, okay, who's behind this program? I mean, this program's been failing for 3-4 years, you know, giving us a 20% return, i.e. an 80% loss of our dollar. Why? Why do we continue to spend $20 million a year on this program as an example? But then I would look at the program and I would see, oh, well, okay, these are the parent companies, and these parent companies are tied to these special interest groups and these PACs, and these PACs are tied to these lobbyists who are supporting this congressman who, surprise, is the one who's writing the legislation or earmarking the spending for these programs to be wasted every year. It's a cycle. When you draw it on a piece of paper, it's just one big, arrow going around in a circle, and they're all feeding each other. And that's why these program assessments were taken off the table and made non-transparent when President Obama took office. Not one member of Congress on the left or right side of the aisle, not that I expect them on the left, but we have a lot of folks claiming to be really strong fiscal conservatives, and they scream from the rooftops about transparency and so forth. But no one sitting in Washington or running for office right now anywhere in this country is saying what I'm saying. No one is standing up and calling out the lack of program assessments being made public to the people. Because at the end of the day, that's the number one thing that we should have in place for every Congress, that there is a tool in place that gives we the people pure transparency that we all can understand on top of it, something that's very easy to follow. So we can understand how efficient are they in investing our hard-earned tax dollars? Because we can talk about all these other issues, and there's a million social issues that are hot topics. Of course, we can probably talk for a day straight on every topic out there. But everything comes back to the money. Everything comes back to the spending. Again, why they're not being transparent about it anymore, and why no one in Washington, no Republican even is standing up and calling it out, because everyone has their hand, their leg, their finger, their head, or their whole body in the cookie jar somehow, one way or the other. So So to expose and call out someone else will be in turn to expose what they're doing wrong. So it's going to take someone like me, a fresh face, a new voice, someone who's doing all the right things for the right reasons, who's calling out this lack of transparency and ready to put it on paper, which I've done, and implement it into a program that actually forces everybody to be accountable no matter what party you belong to. Because at the end of the day, we're all Americans first, and we have to remember that. We're not. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat or a Tea Party guy or a Conservative Party guy who's just endorsed me. I'm an American first. And by golly, I want to hold everyone in Washington accountable so we can weed out this waste and abuse. And to give you an idea of what this means in dollars, in the last full non-presidential election year that we've had that PARC program in place was 2007. I've applied my plan to 2007 and my formula. It's really like a tool. I applied 2007 in that long Excel sheet. My program would have freed up over $806 billion of taxpayer dollars that were badly invested into programs that gave us 35 to 0% return, meaning we lost 65 to 100% of the value of our dollar. And these are programs that failed year after year after year. They weren't designed to be successful. It's absolute pure waste. We could have balanced our budget 100% in 2008. We could have another $400 billion to, guess what, cut corporate taxes. Imagine if we were able to cut corporate taxes. You want to talk about dangling a big fat carrot? We dangle that carrot in front of companies and manufacturers that come back here to the United States, that manufacture here, that produce products here, and guess what, hire people here. It is common sense, like you said, and my plan is based on common sense, and that's why I put the 101 in the name of the plan, Accountability 101 Plan. It's bringing business sense, common sense back to Washington, forcing their hand to be accountable and transparent in everything they touch and everything they spend, and that trickles out to everything else they do, from immigration to schools to you name it, and that's the broken bone in Washington, and that's what I'm going to fix when I go up there.
This is sort of a sidebar question as you were talking. Do you think there's something inherent about, you know, a politician's campaign and they have good intentions when they start? Is there something inherently seductive about the Washington sucks, even the most well-intentioned American candidate citizen who then becomes a politician that sabotages those noble goals?
Yeah, but the goals are principles. That's why. Because these folks say, I'm going to be conservative, I'm going to fight for the Constitution, and we elect them thinking they're going to do it, and they go up there and they don't do it. But the reason why they don't do it is because they never knew how they were going to do it. They never knew how. They feel strong about their views and principles and values, and they probably agree with us on 99% of everything. And God bless them for doing so. And maybe they had the right intentions, as you referenced, before they went to Washington, but they became part of the establishment because they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to swim against the current. They didn't have a plan, a detailed, specific plan like I do, laid out in front of them, committing themselves to exactly what they're going to do in Washington and how they're going to bring real change. I mean, I know that word's been abused now by Obama and so forth, and a lot of people are pretty upset even hearing that word, but we still need change. In this case, the real change is bringing both these establishments back down to a constitutional level, holding everybody accountable and responsible. And again, that's the very reason I'm running. So if I just go up there to be part of the establishment, well, I couldn't be more polar opposite in why I'm running. I couldn't be more polar opposite in the plan I'm presenting. And for a Nick Wilkerson to win on the Accountability 101 plan and to win against establishment candidates, to win against millionaires who are trying to buy their way into Washington, and to win in the general over a Patrick Murphy, who's really just a Nancy Pelosi puppet, you know, who's being positioned to play the centerpiece and really hasn't done anything but be the freshman congressman puppet, for Nick Wilkerson to win on this Accountability 101 plan that's so strong says a lot. And I carry that into Washington in this scenario, winning this race. And that's how I'm going to swim against the stream. So, again, we're losing these people when they go to Washington because they never really told us how they're going to follow through on what they promised to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I applaud all of you joining in and taking that on, because as I said at the top of the show, it's not a easy task. It's not a race for the faint of heart, but it's necessary. We need to have those challenges. That's what our political system was designed by the framers of our Constitution, so that we all win, that we're better off by that competition and not having big government be the enemy that it's perceptively become.
Well, you know, a lot of people scream for a revolution. You even hear that. And by all means, none of us want to see anything as dramatic as we've seen in our country's history. Not that it's not realistic. You never know. I would never call for that. What I'm doing this because I believe I'm bringing a fiscal revolution. I really believe that. I'm bringing a fiscal revolution to Washington on a solid plan. And, you know, folks listening want to learn more about it, learn more about me, see some videos. I do a lot of these little infographics and pictures and so forth and graphics, millions of them online, or not literally, but a lot of them online.
Perfect. I was going to ask for you to give all your information for people to find out more before we close here so that they can contact you if they're interested.
Absolutely. The website is ticknick2014.com. That's ticknick2014.com. There you can find everything about that and my plan and so forth and much else. I've also put together a plan to address our VA system and to address Wounded Warrior initiatives. So, again, I'm that one candidate that's just tired of people telling us what they're going to do. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to do it. So I'm putting plans out there so people can read them and see exactly what and how I will actually follow through what I promised. The Facebook page, the campaign page, just go to Facebook.com, and it's Nick Wilkerson Campaign. Last name is spelled W-U-K-O-S-O-N. That's W-U-K-O-S-O-N. You can find me on there as well, too. We do a lot of stuff on there, and as well as Twitter. So we're definitely loud on the social media level. We have to. We're grassroots. I wish I hadn't money to throw out there. I'm the only candidate that's not running in a deficit right now. I haven't loaned myself any money. I don't have money to loan myself. I wish I did, but I'm the only candidate that's not showing a debt right now in this campaign, which says a lot. I'm practicing the true conservative talk.
I was just going to say that says a lot right there, and then that's true. So take a look at that. Thank you for sharing, because as I said to you at the top of the show, that, you know, these issues and your viewpoints are ones that no matter what our congressional district is, we need to look at them. And hopefully by taking a look at your information and finding out your viewpoints, and you've given us the information to ask of our own candidates wherever we are. So I appreciate your time and sharing with us today, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that was good to have our guest finally able to get through. So thank you for bearing with us on our little technical issues. And I thought in terms of our trend on fashion, quickly at the close of our show here, that we have the political colors that too have become polarized, from the Democrats being associated with blue and the Republicans with red, but maybe we can, as we unite together, I don't know, maybe white will be the color for the people who are sick of the party alliances and just want to go back to the constitutional, maybe the purity of the white and the Constitution will be the new color for the 2014 elections. But in that, we invite you back to Tamerlay's Trend On next Wednesday. As I said, our guest will be Willie Spears, a motivational speaker and football coach down in Florida also, but with themes that will resonate on many levels as well. We are live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the LinkedIn Local Network. Tamerlay's Trend On, engaging your audience to trend on you. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye. Thanks, Heidi.